What's up, y'all? It's 10 at 3 time at Tennessee. How are you? I hope you're doing well here on this Tuesday, February the 10th, 2026, here on a very lovely, warm Knoxville, Tennessee today. Ladies and gentlemen, after weeks and weeks of just snow and ice and nastiness, it is, what, a high of 67 degrees today?
It feels
today?
Like that perfect spring day out there.
Feels amazing.
Hell yeah. I walked
this
out there.
This is basketball weather,
it
baby.
It is. This is
recess.
This.
Remember, he was a kid. Well, and I was a kid. Yeah. And then when this come around, we go to gym class. We was outside. We was
yeah.
It's the absolute.
This is a South Carolina
best.
February for
but
me.
But you smell like outside you. For the rest of the day because gym class sometimes, well, my senior year was like first period.
I just think, yeah. I think what do they say? God knows baseball season starts this week. That's why he's warming it up a little bit today. But it is getting some rain tonight, but that's all right. Don't worry about it. Hey, right now it's not in the teens. So that's nice because I think leaving Rupp Arena on Saturday night when Emily and I were walking out of there. There were like snow drifts outside and the wind chill was in single digits. And and now just a couple days later, sitting here, it's 67 degrees outside. Baseball season starts in a few days.
Beautiful.
My goodness, what a day here.
What a wonderful
what a day.
What a day
here with Elijah Nixon and with Tom Barkley. How are we doing, fellas?
Doing good, man. It's a weekend. Guys, listen, coming from Louisiana, we was talking about this off. Nichols is coming here to play baseball.
Uh-huh.
LSU will be here on Saturday to play basketball. Do you know why they have to be here and not play this home game they chose this weekend?
I didn't until you told me a few minutes ago.
Mardi Gras. They cannot play games inside of Mardi Gras in Mardi Gras time. Because Mardi Gras is focused on just Mardi Gras.
Like,
nobody's going to a sporting event. I mean, do crime happen during Mardi Gras? Since the news stopped, right? Since everything stopped?
I think everyone stops.
I think reported crime stops would be my guess as someone who, and again, come from a big Catholic family. I can say that. Yes. I am allowed to make those jokes. I can make all the Mardi Gras jokes I want. It is allowed.
I can make
it is
jokes as well.
It is allowed. It is allowed. It is indoctrinated into it as
a
child.
I find it hard to believe it's almost Mardi Gras.
It's Mardi Gras week right now.
It's wild.
I know. I find that so
hard
to believe.
They do it when I was there last week. It's an all week event. You get your king cakes, you get whatever you like to, you know, and then you get your footballs and you get your beads and just get a helmet because when they throw whatever, they're not aiming.
It's something that everyone should experience at least once, and I would say the younger you are, the better, but there's no wrong time to let loose, right? Life's short, party a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Life is short, enjoy the wins, enjoy the little things. Tomorrow's not guaranteed. It's never guaranteed. Go out there, enjoy it. Enjoy yourself. Not too much, though. Do it responsibly, but have a good time. We got a lot to talk about on the show today. It's hard to even know where to start. I know that we'll talk a little Tennessee baseball before we get out of here. We'll do that later. Obviously, there is some news after just one day after, Tom was in here celebrating his South Carolina Gamecocks wrecking the Lady Vols on Sunday.
On.
The Los Angeles Rams of Elijah Nixon have taken Tennessee's cornerbacks coach, who his name is Michael Hunter Jr., but he's basically Abe Simpson because you ever seen that?
He walks in. Is he yelling the clouds?
That's awesome. He walks in, sets the hat down, turns around, comes in, takes the hat back off and leaves.
Yeah.
That is what Michael Hunter Jr. has done. He arrived in Knoxville 5 weeks ago as a rising up-and-comer in the coaching world, and he will exit 5 weeks later as an up-and-comer, a riser in the football world.
Talent don't stay one place too long.
No.
You know?
After two seasons with Ohio State, he took a five-week visit down south to Knoxville. I hope he rented. Hope he did not purchase a home.
That would be awkward.
Because it'd be awkward. That realtor would be really happy. He is now headed reportedly to the West Coast. Now, Tennessee has not officially confirmed this. The Rams have not officially confirmed this. But I believe the report came out, and I want to make sure. I think Matt Zenit's got it before Pete Nakos, but they're around the same time as each other, so it's hard to say exactly who between them kind of got it first. But regardless, I have since heard that it is true that he is expected to be hired. And basically that means that something's been agreed to and maybe either signed or not signed by both parties or agreed to by the agent but not signed yet. Basically, it means this is going to happen.
Well, you know,
this is going to happen.
It actually is a good move for the Rams. I mean, honestly, you know I'm a Rams fan. But
sure.
Aubrey Pleasant was leaving. Aubrey Pleasant is a guy who's looking for a defensive coordinator job. I know Arizona and Cleveland's the top two right now, mm-hmm. and then he's going to go take that. So, you know, they had to replace Aubrey Pleasant. And with Michael Hunter, I don't know. Like, I was excited for him to have a – because he has a project here. The secondary room with the Vols wasn't the best last year. They didn't.
And they perform. And they brought about 37 new defensive right? backs in to party with. Basically. So, they got a Mardi Gras in that room. Yeah.
So he had a project here to go do, but now he has another project in L.A. Our defensive back room wasn't. I mean, it was probably as good as Tennessee's last year. It wasn't the best. So, you know, he has a project, but he's just doing it at an NFL level. I don't know what to say. I think the Vols. What do you do now? Do you go and do you? Do you hire from within and find somebody in that aspect? Do you go and try to pluck from somebody else's staff? Do you go from a retired guy and try to get him back? I don't know what it is, but I just know that whoever it is going to have a full slate of work on his hands.
You want to hear my really fun, and it's not backed by anything but super fun sports conspiracy theory about this hire by the Rams? I have tell me again, where are the Rams picking in the first round? 13, 14?
We got two. We got 13 and 20-something, 27.
13 and 27, right?
29.
What do the Rams very desperately need?
A corner.
Where, which university has two potential first-round corners on the active roster, two corners who could be taken in the first round? Name me the one university that ticks that box, ladies and gentlemen. The Tennessee Volunteers. So I imagine that these are not at all connected, but in my mind, I've seen a couple of mock drafts where the Rams are taking Colton Hood, and I've seen Jamal a couple McCoy. Where they're taking Jermaid McCoy. And I cannot help but imagine that the guy who has technically been Tennessee's cornerbacks coach for the past five weeks has not seen a spring practice yet, but he's got a couple of years of film to study very carefully, a lot of interviews about personnel background to go over very, very, very fine-tooth comb-y.
Yeah.
I have a conspiracy theory that now the Rams are absolutely taking either Colton Hood or Jamal McCoy in the first round of the draft, and they have gotten the intel that they needed from agent Michael Hunter Jr. That's my narrative now, and is it probably not true, but it's just feasible enough in this crazy world of the football coaching business. I'm going with it.
I think it's two people, actually. I think I'm happy you said that because I was thinking where he came from prior and his guys coming in the draft with Caleb Downs.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking Caleb Downs as well. I was like, maybe they trade up and try to grab him. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. You might be right. You might be on to something,
Wes. All
Wes.
I'm saying
you might be on to something, Wes.
Now, you could say, Wes, Michael Hunter Jr. is a very good young coach who's seen as a rising star in the business, has helped Ohio State win a national championship, did a nice job at Oklahoma State, has worked with Jim Knowles at a couple places, someone who's really well-respected, still very young, very, very bright future ahead of him, played 4 years in the NFL. Hey, on his own merits, mm-hmm. absolutely deserving of the job that he's gotten already. Absolutely deserving of it. But when there's low-hanging fruit conspiracy theories out there to be had, do not think that I'm not going to grab them, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to grab them with both hands and have fun with it. But in all seriousness, because later in this show I might be talking about a conspiracy theory that I think is stupid with sports. So I'm going to be a inconsistent maybe on okay. that. But nonetheless, that's still my narrative, and that's my narrative. But there was plenty to discuss before that happened, but had to get Elijah in here because I know he's got some other stuff to do today, but I wanted to make sure got him in here at first so we could drop this Rams conspiracy theory on him. And just remind everybody that it is not my decision that you, the Tennessee fans, have now been trolled 2 days in a row by the other two people who are in this room right now. That's all I'm saying. It's not.
I really wasn't intending to troll Tennessee
fans.
You think
that I'm the one doing this, okay? Listen. There are trolls in this room. None of them are me. Okay, let's let that be out there. Stop mentioning
I'm also wearing a Carolina hat again today.
Hey, you're the one. You're the one who admitted
I say show it, Tom. Show it, Tom. There it is. Two different ones.
There it is.
You know, you gotta mix it up.
Garnet and white. He'll wear the black one tomorrow.
I don't actually have the black one. That's the one I'm missing.
Which there you go. Right. So if you're,
I'll remember to buy one.
So yeah, if you're with the South Carolina Athletic Department and you are watching this, make sure to send a DM to your boy Tom here with some links on the best black and garnet hats that he can find to rep Don Staley and those Gamecocks as they fight for another national championship. speaking of Tennessee basketball, though, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention this. Good night last night for Jemiah Meshack, by the way, who is I put this on a social media post a couple of days ago when I saw that the Grizzlies were playing Jemiah Meshack at center as a rookie in the NBA at 6'4". And I thought, you know, Jemiah Meshack's one of the best college defensive players I've ever seen. He's anything – less potent than an artillery round. I think he could contain one-on-one.
Yeah.
But asking him to defend the five spot in the NBA at 6'4" as a rookie, that's tough. Because I think they listed Meshack at 6'5" here. I think he's really more like 6'4". That's probably what they list him at now in the NBA because they use more real actual heights there. but last night, now for the team, for the Grizzlies, it was another disappointing night. Because, as you know, after those trades, they're just in one right now. They got about 8-9 guys right now, other than some G League call-ups, that they are they're in a bad, bad way right now. And they're just, hey, call it tank, whatever you want to call it. They've traded out, you know, Jaren. It's different there right now.
Oh, for sure.
And because of that, they're kind of going through it. And last night, they had the Warriors there through three quarters. They were ahead, double digits going into the fourth quarter. End up losing 114 to 113. I think they were outscored 30 something to like 15 or something in the fourth quarter. Lost a 1-point game, but Jemiah Meshack did have 17 points, shooting 8 of 10 from the floor. So it's good to see him showing some more of that offensive game there. You know, he improved as a shooter throughout his time at Tennessee. And you know, you don't want to be in a situation. It's no fun at any level to play for a team that's not good. Now, sports, to go out there and play sports is fun. And take it from, I'll say it myself, someone who, you know, quit playing ball, I guess, competitively at, 18, when I decided not to go play very small college baseball as an insignificant, not very good player. You go back and you think about those days fondly, and even the worst days playing ball, you're like, that was pretty awesome. So being able to play ball for a living, pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it's better than what – it's a hard job, mentally very tough, physically incredibly tough. Hey, pressure that comes with it, very tough. It ain't a cakewalk, all right? And anybody saying it is doesn't really understand it. But but it beats what a lot of people have to do for a living. So with that said, yes, it very, very lucky to be playing professional sports, anyone who is, but it's never fun to play for a team that's not good. And right now the Grizzlies are just kind of going through it. And you know Jemiah Meshack, as he said his whole life, he's a winner, right? He won in high school at Tennessee. They won every year. They were always competing, getting deep into the NCAA tournament. The kid's a winner. He's a natural born winner. He always has been. And the Grizzlies right now, all they're doing is not winning, basically. And so that can't be fun. But with that, you get a guy like Jemiah Meshack, who was a second-round draft pick, you know, Mr. Irrelevant, basically, is what they call it in the NFL, the last pick of the draft. And as a rookie, he gets some run. He gets some burn. He gets to go out there and play NBA basketball on a nightly basis. And if the Grizzlies were maybe the version of themselves they thought they could be, like if Ja had been physically and between the ears ready to go like he is at his best, and if you know combine that with Jaren, and you know you get Steven Adams back, and you know the even with losing Bain and all that, like if they thought they could be competitive, and if they were more competitive, he probably wouldn't be playing this much. He certainly wouldn't be playing this much, and he might even be even be spending more time in the G League. But because of this situation, he's able to get more run in the NBA as a rookie, and that's something. Even if you're playing more in the post than you ever need to be,
right?
It's a good thing, I think.
I think so, too. I think just getting run, period, like we just said or talked about, you know, as Mr. Irrelevant, because sometimes second-round picks don't even see the
nothing court. Guaranteed.
No, nothing guaranteed. So, you know, he's getting run now. Is it his position, normal position? No. So it's not like the best tape because you're not going to see a post move come from Jemai Mashak. But you're going to get a chance to see how competitive he is and what he can do on the basketball court with stuff in a stat sheet like what you did at Tennessee and what else he can bring to the table defensively. I'm interested to see how that goes, you know, because, you know, as much as we could talk about it, there's no real big man in the NBA like that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, there's not somebody who's going to just take you to the post and just destroy you down there as much.
You know, Jokic could.
Jokic will, and Joel will, but it's like.
You know, and, you know, Gobert's a guy who's a big guy who can do a couple things. Yeah. I mean, you know, and Embiid certainly, when he wants to bang, can bang. Mm-hmm. And, but, you know, Towns doesn't really ever want to. No, there's a lot of guys who, you're tired of him. The New York, the Connecticut native, and he's coming out now. But there's, I mean, there are guys in the NBA who have that in their bag, it's. Like the one trick ponies who only do that doesn't exist. But I still imagine Mashak, you know,
it's gonna be tough.
I still imagine Jemai like catching the ball, even if it's just a few minutes a game, catching the ball on like the high block and trying to like back down Rudy Gobert and show him a couple moves. I'm gonna fake left, right, I'm gonna spin, I'm gonna bot, and then he's still just gonna if you put the shot up, it's still going into section ZZ. Like it's you know, it gets tough on those streets, but still, I mean, he's getting to play.
You get to play. You get to see him. And then on top of that, like, this brings back for next year. So when next year come and let's say Memphis gets the number one pick and they draft either the kid from Kansas or, you know, BYU or
he'll
whatever.
Have to decide he wants to play to you know, consistently.
Yeah.
He didn't last night. The flu, he didn't want to go again.
But, you know, he'll get a chance to, you know, when they get a big man next year, hopefully he can play his right position. But they'll know that, hey, we got a guy who's willing to do whatever we coach him to do, and he's going to put his best effort out there. So I think that's pretty cool for him.
Yeah, and you know, this will be a year in the draft where I think a lot of people will be trying desperately to move into the lottery and move into the top five because mm-hmm. there are probably 10, 11, 12 guys who could conceivably be a top five overall pick this season. There's a lot of guys. This draft, so much deeper than next year's. Mm-hmm. And so, again, and I was thinking about this the other day, and I was like, is there a reason that Ament could even think about? No, he needs to go because he's going to go early, and early enough. If you're in the lottery, you got to go. But, I mean, you're talking about, like, next year's draft class, and things can change radically in 365 days, right? Mm-hmm. They can change in a month. But it just, from talking to people around the game, like some of the scouts who come through, you know, games at Tennessee this year and other people, just knowing people in the basketball world, this year's draft is considered just a lot better than next year's draft class is. And so, yeah, there's it's a good year to be picking up near the top of the draft because there's a, you know, even if you're 5-6 overall, you could be getting a guy who maybe would go 1 or 2 next year. So that's good year to be, depending on which side you are on supply demand. It's a good year to have an early pick.
While we're on the subject, I know we're talking too far. What team would you want to see Nate on?
Man, I'd have to think I have to think during secret time about that one.
It's a good segue.
It is a good segue. Let's think about that during secret time. And then I know you got to go pretty soon, so we'll let you step out of here, and I'm going to think about that a little bit. Because I got to think who's going to be in the lottery and where he could maybe fit.
Oh, no, I'm talking about what team right now. Don't even worry about the ladder. Like, any team that you see right now.
I would want him to go play for a coach who has some patience mm-hmm. and an organization that has some patience. Because I think he could be a guy who contributes a lot as a rookie. I also think he could be a guy who in 2 or 3 years is something special because you were kind of chill with him for the first year or two. You know, someone like an old school Pop or somebody like that who could wait a little bit of time, you know, because he's not one of these stash guys. Like, right. you take him, you're going to play him. But and being picked high means you're going to have expectations immediately. Mm-hmm. But if someone's got a little bit of patience, and I wouldn't want him to go to an organization where they're firing the head coach every year and they're – you know, they're making trades every year, and I'd like him to be in a stable situation because I think he could thrive there, which is why he wanted to be at Tennessee. honestly, because stable situation there for his 1 year in college. So we got a lot more to talk about that. I'm going to think about that because that's a really fun topic to have. We got a lot more to talk about. We got some Charles Bediako news, Tennessee baseball. We're going to discuss that. We got a lot on the plate today, but we're overdue for a break. So let's get to that, get to Secret Time, be right back here on 10 at 3. It just like Elijah to just drop a really great question and then leave. He's like, "Hey guys, here's a." he's like, "Hey, I got to go after 20 minutes because I got to get some stuff ready for 4 and 6 and 4 and 5 and 6." And so I'm just gonna lob this fire in the hole, and then I'm gonna check out. Be deuces. But I was really happy that he wanted to that he could come in for the first 20 minutes today because I was like, I'm gonna drop this ramp stuff on him, and he don't even know it's coming. He doesn't even know it's coming.
I have mixed feelings about the Rams as a former Missourian, I guess you could say. So you know how that goes. It is complicated. I still like the Rams. I don't like the ownership.
How you feel about Stan Kroenke and how
that's a controversial subject.
And how I the Arsenal fan currently leading the Premier League and number one in the Champions League and how I as a Arsenal fan feel about Stan Kroenke.
Yeah.
Very pro Kroenke here over here at the minute. So, I can't
blame him for bringing him back, you know. But it's still.
You know, he
There was that whole the way that all played out in St. Louis there.
Not a lot of what I would call I wouldn't call
still mad about it.
Yeah, when you look at like just historically speaking, probably a hot. I don't think this is even a hot take. You look at like the average NFL owner/NBA owner / billionaire in general, not historically the nicest guys. They don't. I think it's hard to accumulate.
He didn't live too. His family, at least the Kroenkes, didn't live too far down the road from where I lived. In Columbia.
So. I think it's hard to. It's hard to accumulate that much wealth by 15. Being just a really nice guy.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's a hot take. It's hard to be that successful without being like, I'm going to step on some toes to get there.
Yeah, especially you know the Walt family.
Yeah, come on now. We know what's going on. We know what's going on.
It's a big deal. All right.
Welcome back to 10 at 3. Wes Rucker here now alongside Tom Barclay because Elijah had to
dip.
88 and out the gate. He lobbed that really great grenade question into the hole and then fire in the hole and then he walked out. And so I'm going to have an answer for that at some point. I'm going to think about that. Probably might even be tomorrow before I really think about what would be best for Nate Emmitt because I don't want to just throw something off the cuff there and then very quickly, as soon as we're done at like 4 o'clock, be like, oh, I missed the obvious answer there. So I, you know.
Does he have a right answer in mind?
I like being off the cuff and I like having fun and I like just kind of going ad hoc. Anyone who's ever worked with me knows that I have no problem just going straight off the rip and going like, you know, turn the camera on, whatever. Give me some caffeine here in my my Eastern Tennessee Children's Hospital cup, and I'm good to go. Talk about anything. And if you even say, Wes, you got to go for 4 hours today, you can't mention a single thing about sports. Go, I'd do it.
Yeah, we could easily do that. We've almost did it one
very,
day.
Very very. And in the summer, there will be times where absolutely it will be. Let's talk about some random stuff today. I mean, I talked about Cher for 5 minutes a couple weeks ago. I talked about songs with cowbells in them, the best ones. I'll go forever.
We got into a 25-minute conversation about a fake Buddy the Elf one day. So.
Oh, yeah, we did do that.
We did do that.
And I just said the word yeah, which I apologize for, because as I tell my 4-year-old son every day, yeah is not a word. We say yes, and we say yes, ma'am, and you know, ma'am, and yes, sir, and no, sir, in this house. And I don't know why. There's like some things that I'm not very old fashioned about.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, it that's one where it's like, I was raised that way. I want my kids. I don't know why. It feels like to this day, if I think there's a chance someone's older than me, I'll still say ma'am and sir until they correct me.
Until they
say
correct
not
you
to.
And say, yeah, because that's the thing nowadays. I feel like before it was, almost an expectation, I feel like, especially when I was growing up.
It's weird because I do that, and I'm going to raise my kids that way too. but it's like a show of respect. But then people are like, and I understand this, they're like, how come you don't call any coaches coach? And I say, well, because they're not my coach. Like, if they were my coach, anyone who ever coached me, even like when I was a kid and I'm, you know, early 40s now, I'll still call them coach if I see them until they say, come on, we're all adults now, call me whatever. And I'd be like, okay, mm-hmm. fine. But like someone who's not my coach, it's not like, to me, it's not like a medical doctor, or it's not like a, you know, president, or, you know, an army officer, you know, it's not like those people. I just, you know, go ahead and call them by the title, but it's first name, it's Rick, it's Josh. Like, you know, it's not disrespectful. It's their name, but it's just, they're not my coach. So it's just weird for me to call someone coach if they weren't my coach.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some people feel a certain type of way about that. And I understand why. I mean, especially in a college sports town, like you just think of calling people like, call. It's just a thing of respect to call the coach coach. And I don't think it's weird. It's just, I've never called anyone coach unless they were my coach. Like, I don't know why. Some people are worried about that, and that's fine. But I also understand that that will sound weird coming from me, because I insist that my kids say ma'am and sir. So it's weird. But again, what is life? What tangled webs we weave, right? You know, when we intend to deceive. I think there is some news, and I think it's good news out there for college athletics and for eligibility. Yesterday, the news came down after we were done recording the show, of course, that Charles Bediako, that was denied. The injunction was denied. He will not anymore be playing for Alabama. His college career is done for a second time. It's from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. Go away, or I will taunt you a second time. And this is, I think, the right move. I am glad that it was made, but I'm not going to sit here and lob stones at Charles Bediako for trying. I'm not going to lob stones at Alabama for trying. I will say specifically regarding Greg Byrne and Nate Oates and the institution.
Yeah, that's ultimately where this kind of falls on it, don't it?
But yeah, thoughts on this are maybe I don't think they're not simple, but they're not too complex to follow. At least the way I think about this is that I don't blame Bediako at all.
No.
I don't blame him at all for trying, because the money that's there, hey.
And others have had success trying.
I'd consider it too. I'd try. But my problem from this stemmed, and my problem did not stem from Alabama trying it in the first place.
I don't think you even blame the team necessarily here, because once again, they're operating under a set of rules that, you know,
and
are kind of vague here.
And once again, here's where it gets a little dicey. I think once the NCAA rules know, and then you need a temporary restraining order in order to play, at that point, when you are just a couple weeks away from a ruling on an injunction one way or the other, that's where I kind of have a problem with this, is that just because the law says you technically can do something, it does not compel you to do it. And another layer on this, and again, I think we get in a dangerous spot in any discussion, whether it's sports or life, when we argue only the point that we believe, and we do not even acknowledge that there might be some grounds for disagreement that are fair. Because the best arguments ever made, I think, are ones that also tell you why they might be wrong. Because if all you're doing is saying, I'm right all the time, and I'm right, I'm 100% unequivocally right, I'm not even listening to the alternatives, that's when you start thinking about something as infallible, that's yeah, history's full of people who look like fools in that situation. But I think when this ruling came in and they said, NCAA said no, and then you had the temporary restraining order that said no, and you knew a ruling on the injunction was coming in a couple weeks. That's the key thing here. Because Pavia and others played for a season when they had an injunction. The NCAA said they can't play. Courts gave an injunction saying they could until they could do the case later on. I think that is still a little problematic, but much less problematic for me than when there's a temporary restraining order that says, hey, in 10 days, we're going to have a ruling on this. Now, it ended up coming about, 17, 18 days later because they had to push it back because of weather. Mm-hmm. But still, I think an injunction and a TRO are different things. And what it looks like to me, the difference here is the TRO was you had Nate Oates saying, I don't know if he's going to win this case or not, but I have a 2 or 3 week window with 5 big games. I need big men because my guys are hurt. I'm using this and I'm taking advantage of it and I'm playing. I'm playing him. Because right here it says that I can't technically be in trouble for this, so that's enough for me to do it. That's where I have a problem with it. And it's not the worst thing. I mean, I think what happened a couple years ago, Brandon Miller, that whole deal, infinitely worse.
Yeah.
Just on every level worse. That was a truly bad and I think borderline morally repugnant decision that was made there. This was just a little bit of classic playing in gray area. So I'm not going to say it's the worst thing ever, but I will say that if the worst that comes from this is the NCAA selection committee saying that they're not going to vacate those Alabama wins, but for the tournament selection committee, they're not going to consider those 5 games. It's like they didn't happen for Alabama. I don't know legally what you can and can't do there because the language in the TRO said Alabama cannot be punished for this. Mm-hmm. So the NCAA, I guess, then technically could not vacate that because then they're breaking that law, right?
Yeah.
I'm not a lawyer, just following this on paper. But then the NCAA is saying, well, we're just going to say the Alabama team before and after those 5 games are the only games we're looking at. So we're not punishing you for that, but we're also not acknowledging those games in any way, shape, or form. And if you're Alabama, then you could say, well, we were 3-2 in those games, and if the law says you can't punish us for this, why are you punishing us for this? And then they say, we're not punishing you. We're not punishing you. We're just saying that wasn't the team you have now. And then Alabama comes back and says, well, what about somebody else who's hurt somewhere else or what? It's still messy. And the reason it is messy is because of a decision Alabama made. It is a decision Alabama made that made this messy in the first place. And I don't agree with letting him play then. I think worse things have happened. I think 2 years ago was worse. Just plainly I do. But I think when you look at this overall, this is at least a small, insignificant, not insignificant, but a small, fairly significant win for college athletics and for restoring some sort of sanity to this. This at least cuts off one head of the million-headed snake that is threatening to turn college sports into something we no longer recognize. And it's a good thing. I'm glad that it happened. I don't want Charles Bediako to get any, you know, guff for this. I know he will because that's the way the world works. But for me, he was put in this situation by people who probably told him, no, you're going to be able to pull this off. We're going to be able to pull this off for you. When legally it always seemed to be different because the whole argument – before we go to break here in a few minutes, the entire argument that this is in any way similar to the European situation, which is a line Alabama is still using, is still complete nonsense in my opinion, because it shows a fundamental ignorance of the difference in sports around the world. The way club sports are run outside this country pretty much demand that any good young athlete go play for a club. And in order to do that, they have to play for a professional club. If the only thing they're getting when they play for that professional club is room, board, meals, that is 0% different, or close to 0% different, from someone who would go to, say, a boarding or prep school in the United States. You are allowed to go on scholarship to a private high school or boarding school or both in the United States. And you are allowed to play sports for that level and then go play collegiately. It's not that much different what's happening overseas. And even if you wanted to say that the Bediako situation is similar to that, none of those players over there played professionally or were in the NCAA. None of those players played NCAA sports, willingly left, and then chose to come back. And to act like that's the same thing is just wrong. Even the situation at Baylor, legally, it is different. Now, you might say it's a distinction without a difference. I don't think I agree with that. I'll listen to you, but I don't think I agree with that. There are a million things about college sports that still need to be cleaned up. And for the sake of everyone who has spent their life, you know, enjoying, loving college sports, then I think we have to hope that this is just one step toward getting things back to something that marries college sports as we know them with the reality of life in this era. There is a way for these things to join. There is a way for alchemy to provide some sort of amalgamation of something that we can all recognize. It's still college sports. Not exactly as we knew it, but it still feels like college sports. And if Bediako had been able to play full-time, that would have been a clear step in a wrong direction that I think would have opened the floodgates for a lot of bad things going forward. And so even if they tried to shoehorn him in by saying this is a one-time exception, because now everybody knows exactly what NIL is. A couple of years ago, people didn't know exactly how lucrative it would be. And we can also make arguments about if guys don't get drafted in the future, they can come back. But that wasn't the rule at the time. And I am sorry, but that was the rule at the time, and that rule was understood at the time, and decisions were made at the time knowing the consequences. So, again, I'm not going to sit here and say it's despicable. I'm not going to, hey, you tried, Bama. You tried. It didn't work. You tried. Don't knock the hustle. You tried. But, and maybe, you know, if Bediako really wanted to drag this out, he still could. Legally, he has some interesting arguments that I think if you were to go to trial on this and you were to present a case on this and you were to dump enough money into good enough lawyers, you might be able to make a pretty good case. And hey, at that point, putting it in the hands of a jury, putting it in the hands of a judge, hey, you might, on the right day, get the right result. But I don't think Bama's going to do that because I don't think this was a principled stand. I think this was a chance, an opportunity for them to win a few more basketball games in a small window than they would have won otherwise. So prove me wrong. If you really are taking this principled stand, Bama, stay in school, Charles Bediako. Go stay in school. Keep going to class. Take this to court. Fight your fight. But don't expect a shortcut along the way. Like go if you mean this, go prove your case. You have the opportunity legally to do that. That's what everybody in this country gets on a much more serious level. That's what someone like James Pierce Jr. gets, an opportunity legally to go out there and make a case that is that works in his behalf. That's how the justice system works, or should work. So we'll see. But I think this is a good thing for college sports. I think this is a nice step in the right direction. And I still, before you call me a hypocrite, I still don't think Joey Aguilar should be able to play college football next season. And I won't be, like, mortified, but I'll be a little bit disappointed about the future if that case goes a certain way. I mean, but even that argument's better than Bediako's. But I'm not a hypocrite. I still don't think – I think your window's your window. So that's where I am on that. Let's go to break. We'll come back after a little secret time. We'll talk a little Tennessee baseball as those guys get ready to go because actually, you know what? Hold on. I'm going to save that till tomorrow because here's why, Tom. I'll tell you about it during secret time. But I think tomorrow, since we're talking and then there's a game tomorrow night, basketball, we should do baseball tomorrow and do a little more basketball today to give tomorrow's episode a little more staying power. Let's do it that way. See? Off the cuff. Be right back here in a second on 10 and 3.
All right.
Do y'all enjoy this little peek behind the editorial curtain?
I hope they do.
How
I like them.
How willy-nilly this is. It's you know, it's and the reason why is tomorrow's game basketball they play at State tomorrow night, 9 o'clock down there at the Hump, and because of that, tomorrow the show would end at 4 o'clock Eastern. The basketball game tips off 5 hours later.
Sure.
So for anybody who doesn't get the show live, that's only a couple hours in one afternoon drive home for them to talk about it, for them to go, why would I want to hear an hour on a game that was just played before it was played? Whereas tomorrow, if tomorrow pregame is more baseball and other sports related, then, you know, then what I'm going to tell you now, you have 29 hours to listen to. As opposed to, you know, 24 or 25. Sure. You know what I'm saying? Like,
sure, sure.
That's my line of thinking on that anyway.
Okay.
That's my line of thinking.
Plus, we would have heard from our boy Josh, and that would have taken about 5 minutes, too.
It would have. And tomorrow,
because hey, we'll have a little more time to let that breathe, I think. Would
be yes, and because I think there were some great questions from Elander that I even in that big size sot, I had to save for another one. So I'll be able to play maybe one Wednesday, one Thursday, sure. get some more stuff from our boy Josh Elander. And by the way, I call him our boy because he's a friend of the show. You can go back and find that episode where he went one-on-one with us a while ago. First, we were the first one that he did, too. So thank you for that again, Josh. And go back and listen to that. But we will discuss that more tomorrow, pitching rotation, season expectations, hopes, all those things, including some dumb conspiracy theories that need to be put to bed. Welcome back to 10 at 3, today's final segment here on a Tuesday, February the 10th, 2026. You got me in here, you got Tom in here, you had Elijah in here for the first little bit. He had to take off and go finish some work after spiking the ball on his Rams, stealing a coach from the Tennessee Volunteers after just 5 weeks. He's still in there right now. I can see right now he's in there dancing about it right now, guys. He's just dancing on you. He's dancing
on
you.
Barely had enough time to even take the tour downtown, you know?
Yeah.
See the Sun Sphere.
Did he even see the Sun Sphere? Did he even get to tour the Sun Sphere?
It's kind of impossible not to see it. That's the whole point.
Did he even meet Dolly Parton one time?
Okay, that's true.
You know, did he even meet Dolly Parton one time?
If you haven't met Dolly at least once.
Yeah,
you say you've actually lived in East
Tennessee? Yeah, you can't. It's not possible. No, it's not possible. What's going on with my hair today? I got some weird stuff going on here today. There's, I want to talk a little bit more about Tennessee basketball because today or yesterday. For Monday's episode, we were a little rushed. We had a lot to cram into that.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot going on yesterday. A lot we had to talk about the James Pierce and Rekia Jackson thing. And again, just very very happy that Rekia is physically all right and that James Pierce is physically okay. And hope that there can be some peace and some, you know, get some justice there, whatever justice is, and then figure out what things are and move on because. There's two young people there who have a lot of life to live, and I hope that they get to live it in peace. So But with basketball, I mentioned yesterday why I wasn't overly concerned with the men's basketball team right now. And you might say, Wes, why is that? Because the women fell a couple spots after that game Sunday. They're still ranked. The men are not ranked now. Completely different things, because first off, I think there's much more parity in men's basketball at the moment, and you've seen Tennessee play some of the best teams and be right there with them, and beaten some of them even. And so the women, when they've played the very best teams on their schedule, you've seen what's happened there. So, and I think the Lady Vols, and we talked about this yesterday, no need to rehash it, but I think I have some concerns about, you know, the way Kim Caldwell's adjusting in some ways to this level in terms of the ability on the other teams, the talent level on the other teams, and then with her style of play, and then also with the way she says some things publicly and how that will look, whether it's fair or not. It's been around this beat, this market, much more than long enough to know how that's going to go down, and it's gone down about how you'd think it would go down. Not very well. So, again, if you're going to double down on your philosophy, both publicly and in terms of the style of play, go win. Go win, prove everybody wrong, because if you don't, then people are going to say, why aren't you making adjustments? You know, still, though, only hadn't been here that long, so still adjustments can be made, recruiting at a high level. Give a little bit of grace here and see, okay, maybe it does get better, because it needs to, because some of those things are not looking great right now. For the men, I'm not going to sit here and say after you go an entire week saying exactly what you can't let happen, and then it happens, and then say everything's okay. We saw that going into that game, Rick Barnes told his team publicly, privately, every way imaginable, 40 minutes, guys, 40 minutes. If you just have a good 20, 25, 30 minutes, that will not be enough, especially up there. You got to play a full 40. And they didn't, and they lost. But I was there for both games, and I do happen in this case, to agree with Rick Barnes. What happened in Rupp was not what happened in Knoxville. What happened in Knoxville was Tennessee just got outworked, just got outfought, which rarely happens with that team. And Rick Barnes had trouble sleeping for a couple days. That's how bad that was for him to watch. What happened in Rupp, I don't think that's just Rick Barnes, you know, kind of covering for his guys here. Now, I will say that if you say for an entire week that something can't happen and you're on your guys and then it happens again, you kind of have to play a little more conciliatory tone there. You kind of have to reach for a different club in the bag at that point. That's just psychology. You can't really triple down. You know what I mean? Like you kind of at that point, even for an old school guy like Rick Barnes, you kind of have to put your arm around your guys then and be like, all right, you guys, this wasn't good enough, but you did play hard this time. I do think they did happen to play hard, though. What I did not like was they did not play with enough confidence. That bothered me a lot. If you watch the first half and the second half of that game, it does not even look like the same basketball team. And we're not talking week to week. We're talking half to half. And for both teams. Because Kentucky in the second half was aggressively, and I mean aggressively, running its offense. Passes were made with authority. They were snapped where they were supposed to be. They were making hard cuts. They were shooting the ball with confidence. They were attacking the rim. And again, when you're down by double digits going into a half, a second half especially, you know, because you wouldn't go into the first half down, you know, double digits, duh. You have a lot more freedom then because you're chasing the game. You have no excuse not to just go to the wall at that point. Because what's going to happen? You're going to lose by 40? Well, I think losing by 20 and losing by 40 are about the same thing. So just go out there and play fast, play hard. You know, as General Nealon would say in football, carry the fight. And what happens is sometimes that makes it worse and sometimes that makes it better. And when you start reeling somebody in, one of two things can happen. either you use all of your effort to get back into it and then the other team has a response and you lose, or you have changed the game and the flow of it and the momentum so radically that you keep going and the opponent goes from kind of holding it back, to then they just have no answers and they lose. But there are times in games where Tennessee, and they're very good at this, historically under Barnes, when they lead at the half, they're really, 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 really hard to beat because they'll choke off a game. They'll put it in a headlock and they'll rock it to sleep. They'll very aggressively rock it to sleep. And they do that by being very physical on defense, by controlling the glass, and by running clock on offense and making plays to beat you late in the clock. And I think that works more often than it doesn't at the college level. But it absolutely blew up in Tennessee's face in this game because they kept trying to – when you watch tape, you can see it, in my opinion anyways. There are a lot of people out there who will know this more than I do. But watching it in real time, going back and watching parts of it again, it was every bit as slow as I thought it was. They were cautious. They were tentative. They were not being aggressive. They were not giving themselves a chance to make plays. And they were waiting around looking for somebody else to make a play. And that might be what they're coached to do. Hey, it's Nate or it's a layup. It's Nate or it's a layup. I don't know. I don't think that's the case. But if that was the case, that was the case. I just don't think it was. I think they were trying to manage the game, and I think it backfired. And then I think they were a little bit deer in the headlights. And that in March would concern me, because in those moments, you can't be tentative. You have to make moves with confidence. Now, I will say there were a couple things I did like. J.P. Estrella did not perform well in the second half in terms of the field goal percentage. He missed some shots. He kept attacking. And it kept not working, but you know what? Give me the guy with the stones to take the shot, and I'll take my chances more often than not. And Amari Evans is not a high-volume shooter, but he would go out there and try to make plays, and he took a couple shots when things were not going well. People are like, why is he the one taking the shot? Well, because he's the one who was willing to take the shot. And that's one of the – file that under the many reasons why I think Amari Evans is going to be a really good college basketball player. And – but there are other guys. I don't – they've got to get more – they've got to get more from Jacoby Gillespie down the stretch in these games. Where it feels like beating a dead horse here at times. But for a guy who can spend significant chunks of games being the best player on the floor, he's got to make plays late in games. He's got to. He's just – He did not make a shot from the field in the second half. And while I don't want this to sound like a low shot, because I don't think it is. The fact is, he's paid very, very well, and he's got a lot of responsibility. We all know he's a Knoxville area native. We know he loves the Tennessee program. It's a great story, and he has been an All-SEC/All-America caliber player for most of games. They got to get more from him down the stretch. They just have to. And for Tennessee right now, though, what's good is that you got three games here. There's no layups in this league, but you got three games coming up against teams that aren't ranked that high in the league. Well, on the road, though, that's tough. Go 3-0 in these next games. Get yourself together. Get healthy. Get confident. And then you got a tough stretch coming up to finish it, which is perfect going into postseason play. Play with more confidence. And go out there and win or lose on your feet. Do not lose on your knees. Don't win on your knees. Go win or lose on your feet. Be the aggressor. Commit. If you're going to commit a sin, here's a good Catholic way to end this. Commit a sin. The sins of omission and commission, not the same thing. Don't omit. Commit. Go out there and make a play. And if you lose, you lose. But don't lose like that. We'll be back. We got a lot more to discuss tomorrow, a lot more baseball, basketball, maybe even some football. Who knows? There's a vacancy there now, too. Hey, yo. So we'll see where things are tomorrow when we see you, and we'll have a lot to discuss then, and we will be back right here in this very spot in 23 hours.